Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Our final episode of this year and decade tackles a pair of topics. First, the future of diversity on television. We'll size up that future with former crypto writer and surveyor Nature Tucker. She joins me next. Second, generating the next generation of TV content makers. One avenue of generation is indie film hustle among the new galaxy of smart TV set and connected device distributed channels. Founder and owner Alex Ferrari comes here next half hour. Also ahead, Hasbro and Entertainment World Unite. The new decade will open with a new multicast service, our classic trivia answer, and we up tomorrow be televised, remembers. Hey everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, it's the next day before New Year's Eve 2019 and a new decade to come, and tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a trio of audiobooks free when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 30 degrees at the top of the hour, and we welcome you to our final 2019 and current decade edition of the program All About Television. Delighted you're with us. Wonderful guests coming away over the next 90 minutes, and a whole lot more, too. And we invite you to be in the thick of the conversation. All it takes, a phone call and your voice. To raise that voice, pick up this phone and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you are catching us across the country or around the world here on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. And if you're shy about using the phone, it's no problem with us because we got a chat room ready and waiting for you. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you can find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, as always, you are invited to chat with us through Facebook Timeline and invite others to be in the conversation too. Just click on the Blog Talk Radio Speaker screen on Facebook. Follow the instructions, and others will be live with you and with us. Nature Tucker from Krypton joins us live from Los Angeles after these news notes. Top toy maker and former The Hub owner Hasbro and production company Entertainment One are united today. Hasbro wrapped up its $2.9 billion all-cash takeover of E1 with E's president and chief executive Darren Throop staying on post, reporting only to Hasbro Chief Executive Officer Brian Golder. E1's current series roster includes The Rookie on ABC, now in second season, Private Eyes now in fourth season for ION TV, and MTV's Siesta Key, coming back with new episodes early next year. Stranger Things Season 3 is top dog on Netflix's top 10 list of scripted series watched this year. Season 3 also ranks second on the programmer's top 10 2019 releases watched overall, topped only there by the made-for-TV film with Jennifer Aniston, Murder Mystery. Rounding out the top 5 scripted series at Netflix, The Witcher, which premiered 2 weeks ago, The Umbrella Academy, which premiered in February with Mary J. Blige among the stars, Dead to Me, which had a Best Actress Emmy nomination for Christina Applegate, she won the co-stars there, and the second season of You, picked up from Lifetime last year. Topping on scripted series list, tidying up with Maria Kondo, Jailbirds, Rhythm Plus Flow, and the interactive series You vs. Wild with Bert Willis, and Season 3 of Nailed It. Believe it or not, the new year and decade arriving Wednesday will begin with a new network birth. That birth is Circle, a multicast country music and lifestyle service that will be running in more than 50 markets, reaching 50% of the United States households. 16 new series will premiere over the first 2 months of Circle's existence, including Opry Live, that's live performances for the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville, Stand Up Nashville, stand-up comedy series, Family Traditions, and Southern Weekend. Circle, operated by Opry Entertainment Group and TV station of Great Television, will launch a companion network for smart TV set and device distribution later in 2020. And that is news notes for 2019 and this decade. And now joining me live from Los Angeles, the former writer and story editor of the sci-fi series Krypton, which ran 2 seasons on that network. Pleasure to welcome this program, Nadria Tucker. Nadria, Happy New Year to you. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm glad you're be on.
First of all, catch us up on your career post-Krypton. Where are you at in terms of new TV projects and other things?
Well, I've got some stuff in development right now. I'm always focused on, you know, finding interesting stories to tell about women of color. And I'm also working on a video game at the moment that is very exciting and new for me. So a couple things cooking and, a lot to look forward to.
And we'll talk about that video game project shortly, whether it might have some TV possibilities, as some video game titles are now being adapted into television, like Halo, for example, for Showtime. So as we close out this year and this decade, what do you see about where diversity is at with television, especially among women of color?
I think there are a lot of great shows out there that are focused on women of color that are in everybody's top 10. Euphoria is one. The Witcher is another show that has a lot of people of color who are amazing. The Watchmen, right, was like one of everybody's favorites. And Regina King is, you know, a goddess in that show. So there's so much out there for us to watch that it's almost like, you know, too much choice. But
is that good in your opinion, that there is too much choice as well as diversity for people to see?
No, I got it. It's so good. It's amazing. It's something that I wish I'd had when I was a little nerdy kid growing up watching Xena and, you know, Star Trek. I wish there were these shows that existed back then in the 90s. So I think it's really cool, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
Well, welcome somebody to our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. Thanks for coming on board. If you have a question or comment for Adria, put it in the room or make the call, 646-652-2906. One of the things that really hit, I think, this year was the fact that a number of women of color and women overall were able to get multi-year programming deals with the likes of Netflix, or Hulu, and Amazon, individual studios like Warner Brothers or Lionsgate, and it seems that that's a trend that is not stopping. You know, you as well as the overall trend, you have, of course, Shonda Rhimes, you have Kendra Barris, you have the Obamas, you have Regina King. Back, Regina King made a deal this year with Netflix. What you're thinking about multi-year, multi-programming deals with one provider or one programming service, both the idea of that type of deal, and secondly, how that could foster more diversity?
I think it's great. I think it gives people a chance to develop ideas and get paid for it. So you've got someone like Shonda who probably has several shows she's working on right now that are in the process of being made, and a lot of people are getting paid because she's got that deal with Netflix, where if she were creating content for multiple places, she might have to do things on her own and not get paid for that. Of course, she's Shonda Rhimes, so of course she's going to get paid. But for people who are not Shonda, like myself, overall deals would be amazing, an amazing way to get funded and have, you know, your ideas be funded from seed to tree.
In fact, you've got these two series that are going to premiere next year. One is Inventing Anna with Anna Chumley. The other is the Bridgerton series that features the voice of Julie Andrews. And we haven't heard from Julie in a long, long time. So this is could be a big event all by itself.
For Julie Andrews.
Mm-hmm. And also the fact that Shonda will finally have her first two shows on, at least two shows to check out next year.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I mean, I'm definitely like looking forward to see what Shonda does at some place like Netflix that I feel like has fewer rules than ABC. You know, ABC is more of a network and it's more, you know, traditional, whereas Netflix is all over the place and she could do anything. And the fact that she's got, you know, legends like that appearing in her shows shows you that she's, like, taking it to another level, which is amazing.
Another interesting point, I think, is that we saw a number of entrepreneur producers form new ventures or get some new things off the ground that will, again, force diversity. You have Tyler Perry, for example, with his new deal with Viacom, where he'll produce for all of their channels. Now it's Viacom CBS. He already has two shows on BET, which are both audience mm-hmm. winners so far for that channel. He's got BET Plus with two shows set to go early next year. He's got the new studio complex in Atlanta. You have Byron Allen, who's been on a tear buying TV stations. He'll be launching the Weather Channel in Spanish next year, 24/7 live service. He continues to do well in syndication with new shows scheduled for that. And you have other entrepreneurs like Will Packer. And you also have, for example, Michael Jordan getting into shows like Carol McCready, the co-Oscar-winning writer of Moonlight, doing David Makes Man, which to me what I thought was one of the best new shows of the year on Oprah Network.
Yeah, don't forget the Obamas also are getting into television as well, right?
Exactly, higher ground.
So, yeah, it's, I mean, there's a lot to look forward to for sure. And I personally am looking forward to, I want to see what Tyler Perry's studio does as far as like what films they're going to shoot there. They shot Black Panther there, right? Like, that's amazing. I don't know. It's just huge. So it's very impressive to me, and it's something I aspire to for sure, is like having my own studio and having, you know, multiple shows on multiple networks. It's incredible.
Do you think it's getting easier for women and women of color to do that? Is that something that is impressing you, that might be a possibility that gets realized?
I wouldn't say it's getting easier. I mean, easy is not a word I would use in the context of this at all. I think what they've all done is very difficult, and that's what makes it all the more impressive. But, you know, just because it's difficult doesn't mean it's impossible, and that does give me hope. I think that's cool.
You're hearing the Gia Tucker. She was the former main writer and also story editor on Krypton the last 2 years on Sci-Fi. She also did an episode of the critically acclaimed Doji American series Underground, which I had a lot of high respect for and I wish could still be on the air today. It was a fantastic series. We'll talk about that experience in a little bit. And she joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tawabi Televised, our final episode of 2019 and this decade about to complete. Tawabi Nap, I'm with you live from the web of York. Delighted to have you with us on Blog Talk Radio Speaker and the IR Radio Podcast Network. If you have a question or comment for our guest, make the phone go, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. We're going to be welcoming in 2020 in the new decade with two episodes. Our next one will be on Thursday, January 2nd. It'll be on an hour later than normal, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. And then on Friday's show, we got a treat for you. As our lead guest, we will have From The Witcher, which was announced by Netflix today as the second most viewed scripted series of their service. We'll have the creator and executive producer, Lauren Schmidt-Hisrick. That's Lauren Schmidt-Hisrick of The Witcher, which is getting a lot of big audience reaction to it. And she'll be with us live as our lead guest Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tawabi Televised. It's an early 2020 episode you do not want to miss. If you had a magic wand, what do you think would be the first thing you would do that would stimulate more diversity on television? What would you do, whether it's in front of the camera or something involving behind the scenes, whether it's with producers or executives?
Oh, man, a magic wand. I think I would make showrunners reflect the population of, you know, the countries they're trying to entertain. I feel like there are far too many white male showrunners in comparison to the population. I don't know of any Native American showrunners, for example. That's what I would do with my magic wand, aside from, you know, creating piles of money to give to everyone to make all the shows they want. But, yeah, I think that's what we need, is more diversity in showrunners, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm noticing that the one action that's being taken is the formation of either episodic labs on the part of organizations like Sundance, Women in Film, The Blacklist, and others to try to develop more writers of color or producers of color to create shows that they could then sell somewhere. But the other thing is we now have organizations like Imagine Entertainment, Brian Grazer, Ron Howard's company, and more recently Rideback, which is owned by Dan Lin, and he is partnered with Media Rights Capital, the folks that did House of Cards, among other shows, for various services. And the whole idea of those projects are to create like a 3-, 6-, 8-month window for talented newcomers to get their foot in the door, to learn what it takes to put a show on the air, to be a showrunner, to be a series creator, and then see if they can take on those concepts that they come up with during the course of that study period and see if either they can do it on their own or to sell it somewhere else, in the case of Ryback. Have you thought about, for example, aligning with some of these ventures? And what do you think about this whole idea of episodic labs and what Ryback is doing, what Imagine Impact is doing to try to, again, foster this next generation, this ongoing pipeline of diverse talent?
I think they're fantastic. I'm glad you mentioned Ryback because I'm applying for that one. So, you know, I think what they're doing is spot on in terms of giving people a chance to develop their ideas, develop their talent, and have that funding to be supported while they do so. So I'm all in on those for sure. I think they're great.
We're trying to get Dan Lynn or somebody from Rideback to talk about the TV lab that they're doing. And if you do get in, let us know. We'll get you back on the program with Dan or somebody representing that lab. I've been watching that project carefully. I think it's a really amazing project. And so is Imagine Impact, by the way, which we're still trying to also get aboard. What was it like doing Underground? That you did. I seem to lose one episode of that, and I was a big fan of that series. I wish it could have stayed on WGN America or been sold somewhere else when they canceled it, so that Sony could have kept it alive somewhere. Well, what was it like to work for that kind of a program, dealing with a very important part of American history?
Well, thanks for the kind words. We wish it was still on TV, too, for sure. It was great. It was difficult at times to, deal with subject matter that we were dealing with when it comes to slavery, torture. It was quite intense in the room on some days, but it was worth it in the end to get a product out that I think was really well received and that people liked and still remember, which is, a great way to start your career. That was my first show that I did. So I'm really proud of it still.
How'd you break in? How'd you break in and have Underground be your first move in TV?
I'm sorry, what was that?
How did Underground become your first, your breakthrough role in television? How did you get the role there?
Oh, that's a great question. So actually, I got my start through the Blacklist website. So I had a pilot that I put up on the site, got some ratings back, and ended up on one of their lists of most staffable TV writers. And through that list, I found a manager. And through that manager, I ended up with an agent. And through the agent, I got, read by showrunners Misha Green and Joe Pekaski over at Underground and to come on for season two and met with them and had the worst meeting of my life. It was so awkward. I was so awkward. I thought I bombed it. But later found out that I got the job, which was a pleasant surprise. It was a dream come true, honestly.
Incidentally, one of these days, I want to get Franklin, the manager of the Blacklist, on this program. We've been trying for a number of years, and it somehow he's very shy about coming on programs like this. I hope maybe in 2020 that shyness can be evaporated so that he can come on. I really think the world of him and what he's doing. Also, I want to mention Macro, Charles King's venture, which also is an episodic lab that they started this year. And they may be close to getting some of those projects being sold and then kicking off a second round in 2020. Incidentally, one of the best episodes of, and I think an episode people still remember fondly, the Harriet Tubman episode, which was basically her speech given to an abolitionist, a white abolitionist. And I think that was a very powerful episode and an episode I thought the woman playing Tubman should have gotten an Emmy nomination for.
Wow, I agree. I loved Aisha Hines' performance in that episode. I think she was fantastic. And it's, incredibly difficult to carry a full episode that is just a speech. And she did it. And I was just blown away by her performance. But honestly, that episode for us was kind of a mystery for much of the season. We had a space in the season. We were going, we want this to be the Harriet Tubman episode. What is this actually going to look like? We had no idea. We tossed a couple things around. Is it an action movie? Is it, what is it? And finally, we landed on the idea of maybe she's doing a TED Talk. So we decided, because Harriet Tubman was known for going around and giving speeches to abolitionists, to maybe take that idea and run with it and sort of give her this one long speech, what we imagined it might be like to be in the audience for one of her speeches. And so that's kind of how it came about. And I think it turned out really well.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of great talent worked on that show. Anthony Hemingway, who's one of the best directors in television, as well as executive producers, and he continues to shine in all the things he's doing in TV. A lot of other great people, and I hope that, and by the way, there is a brand new series called The Underground Rail that Barry Jenkins, the Oscar-winning director of Moonlight, is working on, that I think is coming on Amazon this coming year. So keep your eye for that, and hope we can get Barry or somebody involved with that series on. The Underground Railroad is a wonderful source of storytelling. And it was great to see that Underground was the first shot at it ever in television, and hopefully much more to come with Barry's series and maybe some other things too. We are talking with Nadria Tucker. She was a story editor and writer on Krypton, the sci-fi series that lasted two seasons, 2018 and this year. Before that, on Underground, a critically acclaimed WG in America series. And she is with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tamabi Televised, our final episode of this year and this decade about to complete. If you have a question or comment for her in our remaining minutes with her, make the call 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Monday on Tamabi Televised, our lead guest will be the general manager of the new network I talked about in news notes, Circle, that is premiering on New Year's Day. His name is Drew Riefenberger of Circle Media, and the network that is launching New Year's Day all over the country, either as a digital broadcast signal or on your local cable system. That's Drew Riefenberger from Circle, the new network launching New Year's Day all over the country. He's with us live as our lead guest next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Major, talk about the video game project that you're working on. A, what kind of project is it? B, do you see in the background a TV series from that?
Well, I can't say too much about it because I signed an NDA, but I can say that, you know, it's an indie game studio, and so it's a smaller project, and it's been really interesting for me to get into writing for video games because it's so completely different than writing for television, but I do think that video games are taking a lot of their cues from television when it comes to having episodic story arcs, and, you know, hiring writers who've worked in television, which is how they found me. They put a call out for writers who, you know, were interested in video games and had experience with them. And I sent my material over, and that's how I kind of formed this relationship. And it's a much longer process than any of the shows I've worked on. We've just started, and we're not going to be finished for at least 2 years. So it's very, it's interesting, it's different, but I do see the connection between the two, and I think there are tons of possibilities out there when it comes to video game adaptations. I know Ubisoft is doing a program or a fellowship where they are asking women to look into their catalog or come up with video game-related ideas for television or movies, which is another great way that they're fostering talent.
Plus, you have a lot of the independent comic publishers like Dark Horse and IDW and so on represented or either already with TV shows or trying to get in the mix and develop them. And I think the same thing is happening with video games, too. I mentioned Halo, which is going to be on Showtime either late next year or 2021 at the latest. And we hear that there's some other video game producers that also want to develop these multi-purpose franchises where you start as a video game, but you ultimately become a television series, a radio series, a podcast, paperback books, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think you're seeing that with, you know, Assassin's Creed was one. The Witcher obviously is a big one, and I want to say I'm personally a huge fan of that show, and I will definitely be listening in when you have the showrunner on. That's fantastic. But yeah, it's something that I think the video game companies are eyeing more and more. They're looking at ways to take the stories that they create four games and transfer them over and look at how they go from one media to another. They're also looking at adapting movies into games, which has been going on forever, but, you know, it's still another way that these stories just kind of flow in and out of one another in these formats.
Okay. One more diversity question before we let you go, and that is about genre television. I know in the movie field there is going to be a lot of new movies coming out next year in the superhero sports, whatever genre, that women will direct for the first time. Do you get a sense that in this era of Game of Thrones-type genre television that women are going to, let's say, starting next year, have the same type of opportunity, particularly women of color, to direct TV series that have that? You know, my sense is yes, but I'm curious what you think, based on your experience, especially with Krypton.
I don't think that women will have, you know, as many opportunities as they should to direct. I think that there are more opportunities out there for women, women of color, to get behind the camera and really come into their own. But, you know, Victoria Mahoney is the first woman of color to direct a Star Wars property, and that's, you know, been 30 years in the making. So it's a slow process, but I think, you know, there have been baby steps going forward. And I think, you know, we've got a long way to go.
One hopeful sign, the recent social media buzz by John Chu of Crazy Rich Asians fame, that he would like to see Disney Plus do a series with Kelly Tran, who he thought was slighted in the last Star Wars movie. The movie that just came out is earning zillions at the box office. So we'll see if it'd be interesting to see if Disney Plus decides to take John Chu's ball and run with it.
I think I will be watching instantly. I think I want to see that show. I want to work on that show. Hire me, please. I think that's amazing. I think she should get her story told.
Yeah.
And
totally
there are tons of people who would do it.
Yeah. And we should also point out that CBS All Access is working with Alex Kurtzman on a Star Trek spinoff with Michelle Yeoh, taking her character from Star Trek Discovery and turning that into a separate series, a la what Patrick Stewart will be doing with Picard starting in late January on that service. So we'll see what happens. And I think both of us, I think, can come to terms in this that I think the future is very bright and very optimistic for people of color, particularly women of color, in the world of television. And it's
just
a matter of,
I agree.
It'll happen.
I'll be watching for sure.
Us too. Nature Tucker, thank you so much for coming aboard. Good luck with this video game. Good luck also with Ryback. And again, if you get that deal with Ryback, please let us know. We'd love to have you back on the program along with the people from there, because what they're doing, I think, is really, really special. And it's been a delight to have you on our final episode of the year. To you, your family and friends in the TV industry, all the very best for a wonderful 2020 and decade ahead.
Thank you, Simon. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome, Nadia. Take care. All the greatest.
You too. Bye.
Nadia Tucker joining us live from Los Angeles here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. More of our program coming up, but first, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsor, who's been with us for the last 2 years or so, and that is the Amazon division known as Audible.com. Audible.com is one of the great places to really, 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 and I got to say it again, really showcase what audio can be all about. It's an imagined medium, and they really showcase that with the great lineup of audiobooks, and especially in recent years, the great collection of Audible originals that they've been developing. Original audio productions, the best of Broadway, regional theater, and off-Broadway from around the country and the world, and one woman, one man shows as well. And it's still time to get in on our latest offer, which is a great offer to start your year or your decade on, either for you or someone you love, and that is to get, for a trial run of a month, three great audiobooks, two of them Audible originals. And one of those books can be the bestseller by Michelle Obama, Becoming, and I believe she self-narrates as well. And don't forget that with Audible.com, you can listen to their programming on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and IR Radio. Remember, there's also 180,000 titles plus to choose from. And remember, you can also try them out for a full month and get great customer service from Audible's parent, the aforementioned earlier, Amazon.com. So start this new year off great. Really hear for yourself how Audible.com, for you or someone else you love, can transform the way you hear the world. All you got to do to get the trial started is go to this site, www.audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. I promise you, it's an invention of imagination that will last a lifetime for you or someone you love. And again, thank you to Audible.com for sponsoring our program. It's been a wonderful partnership, and we really do appreciate it. This is Tomorrow's Televised. We are part of All About the Two. We're coming your way Mondays and Fridays, usually at 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. We're also presented on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Don't forget, if you want to catch up on any or all of our episodes of this year and decade past, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's our homepage. Many of our episodes from the last couple of years also available in podcast form at iTunes, Apple TV, the Speaker Podcast app, and for the last 2 years, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. You can also catch some of our episodes now at Media Village, the Media Station website. And incidentally, when you go there to hear some of our episodes, you can also catch my latest column out today about some of the new TV shows you might want to watch out for and TV trends happening in 2020. So check that out at www.mediavillage.com. Media Village, the media leadership destination for you and the TV industry. When we come back, we're going back to LA, and we're going to talk to the entrepreneur behind a very exciting new website and programming service that may just generate the next generation of TV makers. We're talking about the wonderful site called Indie Film Hustle, and we'll be joined by Alex Ferrari. He will be with us at report at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradioandspeaker.com. Together, more than 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget to feature our speaker on your home tomorrow for the B-Side special New Year's Eve musical edition tomorrow, 5:30 p.m. Eastern, 2:30 p.m. Pacific. That's the B-Side, a wonderful music show exclusively on Block Talk Radio and Speaker. Remember, that's BTR 24/7, always at YouTube.com. Well, that's more of our final 2019 and decade edition of the program All About Television. Tomorrow will be televised. Happy you're with us. Simon Apple with you live from New York. Next guest coming away in a matter of moments. You have a question or comment for him, make the phone ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. For the last 2 years, we have been spotlighting almost on an ongoing, nonstop basis all of these new wonderful services that you can catch exclusively or mainly through smart TV sets and smart TV devices like Amazon Fire, Roku, Google Chromecast, TouchNet Wave, et cetera, et cetera. One of the latest is out to cause the next generation of filmmakers and video makers. You might want to say it's a combination of Netflix meeting Masterclass. It's called Indie Film Hustle. And joining us live from Hollywood and Internet Radio Exclusive, the founder and owner of that service, he is wonderful, Alex Ferrari. Alex, Happy New Year to you. Welcome aboard.
Happy New Year to you as well. Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. How is Indie Film Hustle doing in its early weeks?
Well, Indie Film Hustle TV, the streaming service, has been around since November of last year, and it's been doing really, really well. It's been growing month after month, and people are really excited about the content that we have on the service.
And explain what the content's all about. If you think this is like master classes or like drawing a classroom videotapes, they may be in for a rude awakening.
Yeah, so the Indie Film Hustle TV is designed for filmmakers, screenwriters, and content creators. And it is, I call it real-world education, real-world film education reinvented. It's streaming all over the world, anywhere you want, on Apple TV, Roku, Amazon, iPad, iPhone. And we have a lot of, about over 2,200 videos already on a lot of film education, a lot of online courses, as well as feature films about filmmaking and screenwriting, about television, as well as not only filmmaking, but documentaries, making of series, and just online courses as well. So it's a little bit of everything. It's a place where you want to kind of go and geek out about film. You can do that. But if you also want to go and learn a whole bunch, you can do that as well.
What kind of audience are you getting from people who would like to break into the television industry? And as I mentioned, want to become the next generation of TV makers, TV content makers, especially people of color?
I get people from all over the world. It's actually quite insane how many people are not just here in the United States. I mean, the majority of the people who the largest audience I have is in the United States, but in Europe, in Africa, in Asia, in Australia, New Zealand, Japan, China, there are people from all walks of life that are attracted to the content that I have, that I provide on Indie Film Hustle TV and on the main site, IndieFilmHustle.com.
Mm-hmm. Again, if you have a question or comment for our guest, he is the head of Indie Film Hustle, available on Apple TV, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, other smart TV devices, smart TV sets soon to come, now about a year old. That's Alex Ferrari. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04. And by the way, if anyone listening out there has been using Indie Film Hustle, first online, now smart TV sets and devices, we'd like to hear from you. So either put your thoughts in our chat room, SimonApple04 by name, at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised right now, or make the call, and we will hear from you ASAP. Alex, who are some of the filmmakers you spotlighted or whose work you spotlighted in various ways on your service?
Oh, man, I my podcast that I have, Indie Film Hustle's podcast, is one of the biggest podcasts for filmmakers in the world, and on iTunes and so on. So I've interviewed, I don't know, probably 500 or 600 different filmmakers, independent filmmakers, television creators, screenwriters as well, on my podcast. And all of those I try to put on IFH TV in audio form for sure, but if not video form as well. So I have uncut versions of their interviews, exclusive content as well that I put on IFHTV. But one of my favorite spotlights that I did was a filmmaker in Wakanda, it's called Wakaliwood. It's in Uganda, in Africa. And this filmmaker, his name is Isaac Numbahi. He actually has created an entire film industry off of $100 to $200 feature films that he's made, I think, 30 or 40 of these in the course of the last decade. And when he started, he was using Hi8 cameras and editing on Adobe Premiere 1.5 and learning how to use it by the help files. There was no internet in his village at the time, so he was learning After Effects and Premiere by himself, and he created an entire film industry purely on love of the industry as well as his need, because to be an artist in Uganda and make a living as an artist in Uganda is unheard of, let alone in the film industry. And he was able to put on his, like I like to call it, the filmtrepreneurial hat. And his story is pretty remarkable. I can go on for hours on his story, but he's basically been able to design, he basically coined the phrase Wakaliwood and now has millions of fans around the world. He makes his movies and releases them directly online as well as his local area and sells them on DVD. And now he's been featured in film festivals around the world. He travels all the time now. When I spoke to him about four or five years ago, he was still, trying to come up. And God bless him, man. And he needed to figure out how to make money with his art. If not, he wouldn't eat. So it's not like a lot of people here in the West where, my dream is to be a filmmaker, and if it doesn't work out, I'll go get another job somewhere. I'll figure something else out. He didn't have much of a choice. It was like if he didn't make this work, he wouldn't eat, and his family wouldn't eat. So it's a very inspirational story.
How much do you feature the crop of TV content generators, some of the major ones like Ray Belanti or Ava DuVernay or Tyler Perry or Byron Allen or Shonda Rhimes, et cetera, in your programming?
I do have a lot of television writers. I've interviewed a ton of television writers and television producers as well. I just had Ken Archery. He did a lot of television. The names escape me at the moment. But I have interviewed and have a lot of television. People who work in television as writers, a lot of gurus who work with television writers and creators like Michael Haig, Linda Seeger, Carl Iglesias, people like that. I have full courses on how to pitch your show in the room, things like that. So there's a good amount of television content on the platform.
What do you think of this current environment of television where now we have, thanks to smart TV sets and smart TV devices, they're taking your service, for example. We have a growing variety of original programming available, not just on broadcast and cable TV, but Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and Crackle and CBS All Access. Now you have mega programming services like BET+. You have Apple TV+. You have Disney+. Next year, HBO Max and Peacock. You have Topics, which is also trying to develop a whole library of new original content for the United States and also showing shows from around the world, too. What are some of the tricks of the trade you see or things that people are going to have to deal with to break in and generate their own careers in television? What do you make of the marketplace right now? And what are the possibilities? But what else do we see the pitfalls too?
I think this is a very exciting time for creators. I also think it's a terrifying time for creators because there's never been more need for content ever in the history of man. We are creating content at a level that is never been. I mean, we literally, I think last year there was 2,500 shows on all these streaming services that are written shows. or something along those lines. Tens of thousands of hours are uploaded every minute somewhere, either on YouTube or on streaming services or something like that. The need and want for content is growing so rapidly. Now, with that said, I think the value of content is dropping more and more and more, meaning that there, since there is, this is just basic business 101, if there is a gluttony of content or a gluttony of the product in the marketplace, the value of that content drops. So in the 80s and 90s, when television creators were making shows for three, you know, well, nine and eight, like let's say in the 70s and 80s, there was three channels. That was it. So the value of the content that was created, the competition to get that content made, was just so, so difficult to get on those networks. But if you were able to get on those networks as a creator, you were paid handsomely. And the value of those of the content at that time was immense, where now there is so much content and so much competition for eyeballs that the value in the marketplace, not a creative value, but the value in the marketplace has dropped. There is a devaluation of media in general across all media. It started with books. It's gone into the music. It devastated the music industry, where the music industry had to change. And now it's starting to hit the film industry and television industry as well. It's just taking a little longer for us to feel the effects of it. But with all these streaming services, the value to make shows and the value of the product is dropped so dramatically that a lot of people who are trying to come into the industry are dreaming of residual payments and money that they grew up with, that the stories of those creators, like Friends, like, you know, the creators of Friends, who every, you know, just those six actors make $20 million a year still off residuals, off of Friends playing all around the world, off of syndication. Those days are gone, and I don't think they're going to come back anytime soon, because the networks are starting to change the way they do things. And the whole industry is just changing and consolidating a lot more. So creators are starting to get squeezed. My point of view on how a creator can break in is to control their content, to control their audience, and to be able to go directly to an audience. There are so many ways now where you as a creator can create low-cost entertainment for an audience that you can either cultivate yourself, you piggyback on another audience that you can go. And in my new book, Rise of the Film Entrepreneur, I talk about this a lot, which is about finding a niche audience and creating content for that audience, whether that be a feature film, whether that be a series, whether that be a documentary or a documentary series. There's the power of the niche is the only thing we have as creators that is going to be able to compete with the big studios and the big budgets that they have. Because we can reach, right now, you and I can upload something to Amazon Prime and have access to hundreds of millions of eyeballs. Now, getting them to see our content, that is the next frontier for filmmakers, for TV creators, and for any kind of creator, is to be able to attract an audience. And creating a niche product or a niche series or a niche film, that is the future. And there is going to be this kind of curation of media, because I think one of the biggest mistakes that a lot of creators do when they're creating their projects is they go after a mass audience. And if you're the studio, that's what you have to do because that's their business model, and that included in film and television. But as an independent creator, you can't. You have to focus on the niche. And I think the future for all creators, including television, feature films, screenwriters, all creators need to start understanding that the game has changed, the rules have changed, and that they must control not only their audience, but the creation of their projects and how to monetize those projects, those series. And that the money, in many ways, it is not from the actual art itself, but from the ecosystem you create around that that piece of art, whether that be a series or not. Like, so, you know, like shows like Breaking Bad, you know, they made about $410 million, to my knowledge, from last time I looked it up. They made about $410 million. It was one of the biggest, I think it was the biggest hit Sony has ever had in television. And but that is just a small fraction of what they've been able to generate from all the ancillary products that they were able to create, selling different things about Heisenberg and Breaking Bad and all these other product lines that they licensed out. That was where they're making the bulk of their money. And creators need to understand the different revenue streams that can be created from a show. And shows are extremely powerful, even more powerful than films in many ways, depending on the niche and depending on what you're trying to do, because you're connecting with an audience in a longer story. You're connecting with an audience over 8 episodes, over 10 episodes, sometimes 30 minutes, sometimes half hour. So there's a lot more, it's a more in-depth connection with your audience. And that story can continue for multiple seasons. So if you're able to create a niche product around a story that focuses on a niche audience, that is extremely powerful and extremely lucrative. It's just about the audiences that you're going after. But I think that is the future for creators in general to break into the business. I think trying to compete at the level of getting to play with the big boys, look, it's all great. I would love to be able to, you know, like I always say in my interviews, I'm like, if Marvel calls, I'm going to take that meeting. But in the meanwhile, you've got to make a living, and you can waste 20 years trying to be invited to the party where I decided to finally create my own party. And then I'm sure I've already been invited to the other parties a bunch of times because I was able to create my own audience, my own party, and my own business. Yeah. And that sets me apart from a lot of other creators. I think that is the future for television creators as well as filmmakers.
And in this niche environment that you've just really portrayed the last few minutes, Alex, how does a creator get that control? Is it through self-financing a program through crowdfunding, using blockchain and cryptocurrency? Is it trying to develop a multi-year, multi-programming deal with the likes of a Netflix or another programming service where you say, I want to be have the freedom to sell my programming under this deal to anyone I want? Whether and then there are people like John Wells and Ray Berlante and J.J. Abrams in their recent multi-year deals that they made with whether it's Warner Brothers, WarnerMedia, et cetera, where they have that right to say, okay, I'll sell some shows to you, HBO Max, I'll sell some shows to you, HBO, I'll sell some shows to you, ABC, I'll sell some shows to you, Netflix, and on and on.
I think it's all the above. It is all about how the creator – well, first and foremost, you know, when you're going after the big boys, meaning ABC and network television networks or high-end cable or streaming services like Netflix and Hulu, you're playing at a very different level than the rest of the world. Where I'm at is creating – where I'm trying to start is create your own business – selling directly to the consumer, directly through Amazon Prime, through your own OTT service like I have with Indie Film Hustle TV, or licensing, you know, creating that product and then licensing it out to different platforms. Trust me, right now, you know, I've done so much research and distribution. If you've got a series, you'll sell a series so much faster and license it so much faster internationally than you would if you had just a movie. There's much more value in series because people want hours of content. So if you can provide them hours of content, good quality content, they'll buy it. Self-financing is one way to do it. Absolutely. You can crowdfund it. You can blockchain. You could do a million different ways to get it done. But the key is finding that niche audience. And I'll give you an example of a niche audience. So let's say you you know, in your spare time you're a gamer and you really love gaming, you know, like either online gaming or PlayStation or, you know, Street Fighter on the weekends, whatever. You can create a series about that niche because believe it or not, there's not a lot of content for gamers. So if you created a show about gamers for gamers, that community would rally around that content. So you can create like an 8-episode series of 30 minutes each, and all of a sudden you've got a powerful piece of content, which is a season of a series aimed at a targeted audience. And now you become much more valuable, not only to your niche audience, but to also to Netflix, because all these streaming services, all they care about is subscribers. That's all they care about. They care about retention and subscriptions. And they want, right now it's all about growth. We are in that stage of where we're at right now in the life cycle of this, the streaming wars. They want subscribers. If you have an audience and you can bring that audience with you with a project or multiple projects, all of a sudden you will be able to have your pick of the litter. And Netflix would pick up a show about gaming much faster than it would pick up a romantic comedy, you know, or, you know, a standard sitcom about just anything, because it's niche. That is where the future is. And I think it's the only way we're going to survive as independent creators.
And Alex, it may be also how some of these smart TV programming services like yours are going to take off in the year and decade ahead. Whether it's a service like the Fantasy Network, which launched this year, which is all about fantasy programming, or yep. Tyrant Sky's Dusk, which is now starting to commission original science fiction shows. Or there's a service that's coming up that we're going to be covering early next year called Space for Creators from TV1's Interactive One unit that is going to be basically a space for new series creators to do their work, particularly people of color in a multicultural multicultural majority marketplace. And it'll be interesting to see whether anybody in the esports world who's developing – I know there's one esports venture, programming venture, that's trying to go on Smart TV sets next year. I think there's another one that's already on. To make it happen. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. Two more areas I wanted to cover before we wrap up. One is, what's your thoughts about, I mentioned this to our first interviewer, guest, what's your thoughts about things like episodic labs and projects like Imagine Impact or the Rideback Venture, which is trying to get new series off the ground?
Say that one more time. I didn't hear you. Were breaking up a little bit.
What's your thoughts about episodic labs for the likes of Sundance, Women in Film, Macro, Blacklist, as well as projects like Imagine Impact and Ryback's Venture that are trying to get new series off the ground, especially new series from people of color?
I think they're great. I think they're great, but, and if you want to apply to them, do so. I mean, look, I would have killed to go into the Sundance Lab. I think I know people who have gone through the Sundance Lab and through many of the in the Blacklist and all these other places. They're all wonderful, but they're not the end-all, be-all, and I need people to understand that. If you're lucky enough to be picked, which is essentially a lottery ticket, if you're picked to go to the Sundance Lab to develop a project, you've won the lottery. It doesn't mean that you won $100 billion. It just means that you won a lottery of a very exclusive group of creators who can go through that process. But you're talking about, what are we talking about, hundreds? And how many people are trying to break in the building? We're talking about tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. So it's not, you want to apply to it, great, but don't waste all of your time trying to get into all of these things. You should be focusing on trying to build something yourself. And the mentality of only looking for someone else to give you a helping hand in this business is the wrong mentality, and you won't survive the business. I've been doing this for 25 years. It's great, and those programs are wonderful, and I think you should apply to all of them. But do not put all your eggs in that basket. You should be developing your own content in today's world. You should be shooting your own shows. You should be writing your own series. You should be putting it all together yourself, because if you're able to do that, you stand apart from every other Tom, Dick, and Harry trying to break into this business. If you walk into a studio with 8 episodes of a show already done, your odds of getting another deal, if that's what you really want to go after, just skyrocket. So my feelings on that, like I said, they're wonderful, they're great, but you really should be figuring out how to do it yourself or put together a team of people, of like-minded creators who can do it. You guys can do it yourselves, because if you expect someone else to give you the shot, you're going to be waiting a long time.
Hey, incidentally, at some point with Indie Film Hustle, the TV service, is there an opportunity for, let's say, creators to create a TV series or incubate a series?
Yeah, right now I'm working a lot of my own original content there. If there's an existing series that is about filmmaking, about screenwriting, things like that, I'm open to take a look at them. But my service is more focused on education. So if you have courses, you know, about filmmaking, screenwriting, television, things like that, workshops, seminars, things like that, that's kind of where I'm focusing on. I do have movies. I do have director commentaries, things like that, about movies, about the industry. I have certain things like that, but it is not the focus of my service, because, again, I'm trying to hit a niche, the niche of filmmaking education. And that's, when I launched, I was trying to be much more broad. And then I realized in the course of the last year that I needed to niche down, and I needed to focus a little bit more on where I just saw where people were watching. So I saw my analytics and I was like, okay, people are watching more education than they're watching anything else. So why am I wasting my time creating or licensing content that people aren't watching? So I need to listen to my audience. I need to listen to my members. And I started creating more content that's relevant to what they want. And that's what I'm doing and will continue to do in the future.
Yeah. Finally, Alex, what role do you see interactivity playing in TV's future? And whether it is the ability to choose your own way that the show goes at various points in the plot line, whether scripted or unscripted, and are you starting to get feelers from some of your audience about, how do I get into interactive TV? How do I bring that, maybe make that an extra dimension of my series, especially when we may see next year Echo, which is the interactive programming service that's available on laptops and smartphones, maybe become an interactive TV service, especially with Samsung and Walmart, the major retailer, among the key owners.
It's a new thing that I understand the concept of it. It's not something I've been hearing a lot of rumblings about. I pretty much have my ear to the grindstone on all of this stuff. It's not something that I hear is going to take over anything anytime soon. I think it's just another gimmick or another thing that could be created to try to gain that audience. As you can tell, the studios are having trouble breaking through as well. They're realizing that money is not the way to get to audience. It is about connecting emotionally with an audience about a subject matter. That is more powerful than any gimmick, including 3D, including, choose your path, all that kind of stuff. There'll always be a small niche, a small segment of the audience that might be interested in that. But I personally would not focus on it. I would focus on, it's kind of like, I want to run an Olympic marathon, but I haven't gotten out of the crib yet. So, that's just another, I would focus on trying to tell a good story first. And if you're able to do that two or three times and become successful at it, then maybe you can go down these other more experimental paths. I might be wrong. It might be the future of all cinema and all television. I truly doubt it, in my personal opinion, if it's something you want to kind of go down. But it's great. If there's not a lot of competition in there, there might be more opportunity there, because I've heard that same story with 3D, with virtual reality. I mean, not 3D, but 360 video. It hasn't popped yet, and they've been talking about that for almost a decade. So it might just be another gimmick, but I would focus on just trying to tell a good story.
And you can see Alex's work with Indie Film Hustle on smart TV devices like Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire Smart TV. If you want more information about Alex's service, you can go online, www.indiefilmhustle.tv. www.indiefilmhustle.tv. And tell everybody about the book and how they can pick up a copy.
Yeah, my new book is called Rise of the Film Entrepreneur, and you can pick up a copy at www.filmbizbook.com. And it shows you how to build a sustainable business from your art, including television films, short films, series, documentaries, and so on. And it's a radical new way of thinking about creating your art because, again, I don't see creators in the future being able to make the money that the creators in the past did. And the world is changing, the marketplace is changing, and the customers' viewing habits are changing. And if you don't change with it, you'll be left behind. And I feel that the Filmtrepreneurial Method will help. So you can pick it up on Amazon. It's on paperback, audiobook, on Audible, as well as ebook as well. So if you sign up for that, sign up for Audible through your link, you can get the book for free.
And by the way, we would love to offer that your book, Alex, as a possible classic trivia question prize early in 2020. So we'll talk about that offline. Alex, thank you very much for coming on the program. Of all the people we could have, the final guest, I think you've really been dynamite in terms of painting the picture of where TV might and TV creators who want to break into the medium might go in 2020 and beyond. And let's hope that we can have you back on as soon as possible. Have a wonderful year ahead with Indie Film Hustle, both the website and, of course, your programming service. And all the very best to you and your team for a wonderful new year and decade ahead.
Thank you so much, Simon, for having me on. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely, Alex. Take care. All the greatest. Enjoy. Alex Ferrari from Indie Film Hustle joining us live from Los Angeles. And again, if you want to know more about his service, it's www.indiefilmhustle.tv. When we come back, more Tomorrow We Televised remembers. We have some more people that we have to share a tribute to. And that's our up segment. Also, the answer to our recent classic trivia question, which turned out to be our last question of the year. And also some first thoughts about what this new year and decade may bring you, the TV viewer. We'll get to all of that and some thank yous, too, after we pause, after the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradioandspeaker.com. More than 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, it's the Decade That Was, a special edition of the Alex Canale Show. That's the Decade That Was, special edition of the Alex Canale Show. That's tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, only on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. Don't forget, Best BTR, 24/7, YouTube.com. Welcome back to more of our 90-minute finale of Tomorrow We Televised for 2019 and this decade about to complete. Simon Apfel with you live from New York. Well, those of you just joining us at the top of the hour, happy to have you aboard. We have our answer to our classic trivia question, our final one of the year coming up this half hour, and also some first thoughts about what this new year and decade may bring you, the TV viewer. But first, it's time for Up as an Update, where we catch up on some of the guests and topics we have covered on this program. On Friday, our next to last episode of the year, we brought you our annual feature, Tomorrow We Televised Remembers, where we celebrate the people in front of and behind the TV camera who passed away this year. Well, shortly after we went off the air on Friday, we learned of at least two more people who had passed away in recent days. And not only that, but thanks to CBS News Sunday Morning, which had their annual tribute feature called Hail and Farewell, narrated by Lee Cowan, we have some more people in front of the TV camera that we must salute as well. So once again, here is Tomorrow We Televised Remembers, Part 2. First of all, behind the camera, Leonard Goldberg. For many years, he was a partner with the great entrepreneur Aaron Spelling in some of the top TV shows of the 70s, from The Rookies to Charlie's Angels. And more recently, he was one of the key executive producers of Blue Bloods, which marked its 10th anniversary this season. Of course, and by the way, one of the first of the new crop of shows produced here in New York with Tom Selleck in the lead. Goldberg, to the end, was an entrepreneur's entrepreneur who felt strongly in creating great television shows with top characters, top actors, and more importantly, top storylines. Leonard Goldberg was one of the truly great people. Incidentally, it was also under Spelling Goldberg that one of the best TV series of all the 70s happened with Mike Nichols, the Emmy Award-winning Family. And finally, behind the camera, Lee Mendelsohn. On December 8, 1965, CBS ran a television special that they didn't think was going to be a winner. The special was A Charlie Brown Christmas, the first TV special based on the hit comic strip Peanuts, with the script from its creator, Charles Schulz. Mendelsohn, together with his animation partner, Bill Melendez, was one of the first people to adapt popular comic strips into television specials and later television series, like Garfield and Cassie. But it was Charlie Brown Christmas that really broke the ground. And it was a program that was put together in 6 months and was completed 10 days before it ran. And upon initial screenings by CBS, they were told, Mendelsohn and Melendez, this is not going to work. This breaks too much ground. The audience is not going to take it. It was a great show in so many ways. It was a special that dealt with the commercialization of Christmas. It was a special that had an all cast member of kids, as Charlie Brown, Lucy, Linus, the rest of the Peanuts gang. It was a special that combined original jazz music by the great composer Vince Guaraldi with traditional Christmas carols. It was a special that Charles Schulz himself put together with the script. It was a special that included one of his characters reading from the Bible. And there were people who said, don't you dare do that. The audience is not going to like it. And we don't like it. But Melendez and Mendelsohn stuck by their guns, and they created one of the great classic specials in all of television history. Millions of people saw that program. Coca-Cola, to their credit, sponsored and commissioned the show. They backed up with their dollars. And the show ended up winning an Emmy Award, a Peabody Award, and it led to the creation of more great Peanuts specials over the next 5 decades. Mendelsohn was an innovator in every sense of the word. He did more than just animated shows, he did documentaries as well. In fact, there's a documentary about Charlie Brown Peanuts that led to the creation of Charlie Brown Christmas. And the records show that he was one of the great animation entrepreneurs of all time. He died, ironically, on Christmas Day this year, at the age of 89. He will be very, very much missed. And then the people in front of the TV camera, how about Artie Johnson? You know, one of the great breakout stars of Rowan Martin Blackin, the one that would play the German soldier. You'd see his head in close-up peering from behind a plane and saying, very interesting, and fill in the blank. It's amazing that after that series, he didn't really have anything that really matched that talent. But when he was on Laugh-In, he was one of the superstars, and he was brilliant. So Zip Taylor hosted, he was involved with many a game show, even hosted the $1.90 TV show in syndication for 2 years with Chuck Barris. Rip Taylor was a very funny comedian who used TV to say things. And he certainly did in so many ways, particularly on game shows. Bob Einstein, Super Dave Osborne, the stunt person whose stunts would always go awry. He was also one of the original producers of the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. His comedy was marvelous. He developed Super Dave Osborne on the syndicated and also Showtime series Bizarre with John Byer as the host, and then later on did his own Super Dave show for several seasons on Showtime. Very funny man, very low-key, and always really great either before or behind the camera. And on. He first came to fame as one of the writers and also co-stars of The Great American Dream Machine. His satire was priceless. And then he did his own little thing on Sunday mornings on CBS called Marshall Efron's Illustrated, Simplified, and Painless Sunday School. It was a great satirization of the Bible, but reverent as well. And it charmed kids and their families alike. It's amazing that that show was around the 70s and early 80s, and he hasn't been around TV ever since. But what a satire. You've heard a lot about him. F.R. Imus was more than just a radio personality and one of the so-called shock jocks. Hang on, WC Radio. All right, we are back on Tomorrow Be Televised, continuing our special up segment on Tomorrow Be Televised. Friends, by the way, we have some new people joining our chat room. If you have some thoughts as well, we'd love to hear them, so put them in the room. Tom and Apple 04 by name. You'll find it at the homepage, blogagree.com, or give us a call, 646-652-2096. I was just reminiscing about our final subject, Don Imus. In addition to being one of the great radio, most controversial radio personalities, he also was a major television force, too. He's one of the first DJs on VH1. I mentioned he did a show called Imus Plus here in New York. There was a possible syndicated entry on WAW TV Channel 5. But more importantly, he brought back with Imus in the Morning on MSNBC the whole idea of a radio TV simulcast. A lot of other simulcasts, such as Golic and Wingo, Mike and Mike in the Morning, The Breakfast Club, and so forth, owe their existence on television to Don Imus doing it first with Imus in the Morning. First on MSNBC, then he was taken off the air in light of the Rutgers women's basketball controversial remarks, which he apologized profusely for after it happened. Then he got back on the air through RFD-TV, and finally his simulcast ran for a number of years on the Fox Business Network. That simulcast ended in 2015, and of course last year he marked his 50th anniversary in radio by going off the air on his nationally syndicated radio program. Don Imus was as controversial a satirist as a radio personality as you can have in television. A lot of people didn't like what he did. A lot of people did. But you got to give him credit for breaking a lot of ground. And I was a big fan of Imus, by the way. I enjoyed not only his bits, but he also enjoyed his emergence as a talk show host, talking with media personalities, sports stars, and more importantly, political figures alike. He was able to put them in their place, if you will, but also draw some interesting comments, whether it was President Bill Clinton or Senator Alfonso D'Amato or whoever. He was able to do it and do it really, really well. And even Morning Joe, the program that was created by MSNBC out of Imus's firing from that network, they all, and they will tell you this, Joe Scarborough, Mina Brzezinski, they will tell you they owe their existence to Don Imus doing his thing on MSNBC in the first place. And just like Don Imus getting on WFAN, save that station and turn the idea of sports radio from a one-market station to a national phenomenon. He did the same thing with MSNBC. He turned that channel around from a also-ran to a major news and information source. Same thing with Fox Business Network. Owe their existence, I think, to Don Imus and what he did with those simulcasts. Don, on Christmas Day, developed an illness. He passed away 2 days later. We learned about it by he died Friday morning. We learned about it after we did our show Friday afternoon, and we had to make sure that we got in here. It may be the most controversial choice we've ever had to put in this, but again, because of what he did in television and because of his great radio work as a simulcast, including raising over $40 million for the Tomorrow Children's Fund, the CJ Foundation for SIDS, as well as Sudden Death Syndrome, and also the Imus Ranch, for children dealing with cancer and other disorders, he deserves a placement here. I think he will be in the Radio Hall of Fame before all is said and done, along the likes of Paul Harvey and Arthur Godfrey and Bob and Ray and so many others. But in terms of TV, there definitely is a special place for Don Imus. Simulcast would not be simulcast without him. And by the way, brought back with simulcast, which was early on in television history, back in the 1950s, very big with the likes of Arthur Godfrey. I don't remember, but the great Arthur Godfrey had his morning radio show, Arthur Godfrey Time, on CBS, which presented live on CBS television as well. So Don Imus, who died at the age of 79 on Friday, he will be profoundly missed. Whether you like him or hate him, he did make his mark in TV as well as radio with those simulcasts. And that is our Tomorrow We Televise Remembers for 2019. Love to hear what you think. And if there's anybody, by the way, that either from Friday or from today that we didn't get in, please let me know. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com, or use our social media on Facebook and Twitter, and do let me know. Now it's time for the answer to our final classic trivia question of the year. Unfortunately, nobody got it over the last 2 weeks, so here is that answer. First, the question. The Son of McBride was actor Harry Morgan's first TV series of many as a co-star. What was his last? We told you, as a hint, that his co-starring role was in the mid-80s. It was based on a classic adaptation of a classic Broadway play in the 1930s, later an Oscar-winning film. And in the film, his role was taken by Lionel Barrymore, and it was directed by Frank Capra. The answer, you can't take it With You, one of the classic Broadway plays and 1930s movies of all time. And I think one reason why it was a very difficult thing is because in many cities around the country, You Can't Take It With You was not seen. Here's why. It was a syndicated show. It ran in 1986. 22 episodes were made, but in many stations around the country that took the show, only 4 episodes were presented. It was a 7:30 p.m. Monday through Friday show. It was one of 5 original comedies in that time period, Monday through Friday, checkerboard located, that was done by the NBC on television stations at the time, the so-called prime access rule that ruled the roost, still does, between 7 and 8 p.m. Eastern time and Pacific, et cetera, on many TV stations across the country. And unfortunately, Wheel of Fortune, Jeopardy, other shows of that caliber wrecked the ratings for You Can't Take It With You so badly that many stations pulled it after 4 episodes. We understand that there may be a possibility that down the road, all 22 may show up on videotape form at YouTube. You should know that Harry, I thought, gave a great performance in what turned out to be his final co-starring role as the patriarch, the grandfather of the family, the Lyle Barrymore role in the movie. So once again, the answer is You Can't Take It With You from 1986. And that is the answer to our final Classic TV question of the year. Congratulations to all the winners, by the way. And it means that next time around, we will have a new Classic TV question. We'll do it on Monday. We're going to give it a little breather to let you get started with 2020. So our first Monday show of 2020, we will have, again, a new Classic TV question. And again, the prize will be identifying yourself, the paperback book by Night Flight creator and former TWBT guest, Stuart Shapiro. If you know the answer when we post the question on Monday, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name as well as where you're emailing from, full address. So if you win the prize, you win it, okay? And again, congratulations to everybody that participated this year and all of our winners. We had quite a few this year, and we thank you all for playing. And remember, in order to get in the game, play in, and all the very best. In a matter of hours, less than 36, we will complete 2019 and this decade, and what a decade it's been. If there's one thing to me that pinpoints why this decade happened the way it did, and why we're in this era of plentiful television, of diverse television, of smart TV, and interactive TV, especially in the last year, it's one development. The American public, you out there embracing smart TV sets and smart TV connected devices like Amazon Fire, Roku, Google Chromecast, NVIDIA Shield, TouchJet Wave, Intel Compute Stick, and more recently, Portal TV from Facebook. None of these products were available at the start of 2010. In fact, one of the early players in connected TV or smart TV was Yahoo. They didn't make it through the decade. In fact, very little. But most of the major smart TV makers did, Samsung, Vizio, LG, etc., and again, Amazon Fire, Roku, etc., etc. And we're leaving this decade with between 75 to 80% of all U.S. television households having these products. And through them, they are watching upwards of 10 billion hours a month of content and apps. This is what broke the ground for Netflix, for Hulu, for Amazon, for CBS All Access, for Crackle, for Indie Film Hustle, and all of the galaxy of smart TV distributed services, either mainly or exclusively, that you're now able to see at a moment's notice, as well as this era of mega programming services that started this fall with BET Plus, Apple TV Plus, and Disney Plus, and will continue next year with the likes of HBO Max and Peacock. What can we look forward to this coming year? Simply, I think we will have an even bigger era of plentiful TV. I think we'll see more networks emerge. I think interactivity will happen in some fashion, in a big way. How far, how fast, can't say yet. But certainly we have some projects that can give us clues, like Food Network Kitchen, like Portal TV, with its video chat and its augmented reality apps. And whoever thought augmented reality would get on the TV set unless you had glasses or goggles or headgear? That's now been proven an offbeat deal. We may have, I'm sure we'll have something disrupting the whole scene, maybe more. And don't forget, we have 5G coming up, as well as the broadcast stations, the rollout of next-gen television. That will, I'm sure, open up more opportunities, including things that we can only imagine about. I'm sure somebody is out there. But most importantly, I think whatever happens this year and decade ahead, it will happen because of you, the American public, and you, the world public, the people in this program. You will determine where we go. You will determine the content, the interactivity, the new applications that will happen. Whether you're able to use your television set as your hub to control anything else in your home or apartment, from the front door to your room temperature, to order all sorts of products and services, to order anything at any time, to use anything at any time from your TV set, your smartphone, your tablet. I think this next decade ahead will cement that. And I really hope that it will be for the better of society, the betterment of you. And only all of us can determine that. On January 2nd, this Thursday, I will start my fifth decade covering this world of television. I feel very humble and very blessed to be in that role. Everything willing, I'll be around for this whole decade, and I hope this program will be around too. And we'll all take this journey together, and I look forward to having that ride with you. And one more thing about where we're going with Tomorrow Be Televised. It's my commitment that we will try to get on more podcast sites with this program, that we will get a TV version back on the air in some manner, that we will have a bigger relationship with MediaVillage.com, which is now taking some of our shows, maybe even originate our show from their offices in New York, to take more of our programs on the road, and to always involve you in the conversation. That's why we encourage you every single episode to be with us, to talk to our guests, to explain yourself, to be interactive with us by phone or chat room. The more you are, the more this program will have an impact on you and your contribution to this medium. And again, I look forward to taking that journey ride with you. It's going to be some kind of ride. That's all I can say with certainty for now. And I look forward to, again, taking that journey with you. We'll be back on Thursday, January 2nd, first of two episodes to kick off 2020. Our January 2nd episode will be on an hour later than normal, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. Then coming up next Friday, our lead guest will be from the hit new Netflix series, The Witcher, creator, executive producer, Lauren Schmidt-Hiswick. And then on January 6th, a week from today, our lead guest will be the general manager of Circle, the new programming service premiering on New Year's Day in much of the country on multicast, either on digital multicast signals or on cable, Drew Riefenberger. That's all coming up later this week and early next as we kick off 2020 in a new decade right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, please go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, all of our episodes this year are available to you on podcast form in a number of ways, through iTunes, Apple TV, the Spreaker Podcast app, and, of course, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Don't forget to go to iHeartRadio.com, click on the search bar, put Tomorrow Be Televised in it, click, and then you're in. Remember, we love hearing from you. That includes the rest of 2019 and the start of 2020. So email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're from. That's how you get involved in our Classic Trivia Question of the Week. And also, be part of our regular feature Show to Know, which we will do no matter what, on Thursday's first episode of this new year and decade. If there's a TV show you like that deserves attention, let me know. If we use your suggestion on the air, you get the credit. Again, it's simonapple04@yahoo.com. And don't forget, you can find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter anytime. On Twitter, it's at UBCSimonTWBT. That's my handle, at UBCSimonTWBT. Whatever you want to talk about in television, I'm open ears to you, because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, those are those of Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and iHeartRadio. And because it's our final episode of the year, permit me to do a little bit longer quit list than we normally do. First of all, thank you to all of our guests with the hundreds of guests we've had in this program throughout 2019. Thank each and every one of you for making a contribution to this program and to our audience. Thank you to all the public relations people that we deal with, from the broadcast networks, the cable networks, lots of Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I particularly want to thank the PR people who deal with all these new smart TV services that we've been covering over the last year, each and every one of them, including Indie Film Hustle, which we showcased today. We really appreciate you allowing us the opportunity to give the services you're representing a voice. I want to thank everybody at Blog Talk Radio, including my fellow Blog Talk Radio hosts and producers. Thank you for all the great radio you've caused. Thousands of hours of productions, a roll of original, many of them live, many of them involving our audience over this past year. And thank you, of course, to the great staff at BTR, including our production associate, Candace Williams, Andy Toe, Blog Talk Radio's general manager, Jake Steinberg, the executive content producer, and foremost, the very co-founders of this enterprise, Alan Levy and Bob Charish. Thank you also to Audible.com, our sponsor over the last 2 years. Remember, Audible has transformed the way you hear the world. And don't forget, for that great audio book gift, 3 free books for a 1 month trial. It's audibletrial.com/televised. Thank you to our wonderful affiliates, Spreaker. Thank you to iHeartRadio Podcast Network. We're completing our 2nd year with them today and launching our 3rd on Thursday. Thank you for your continuing coverage of the show. We hope to do more business with you in this coming year and decade. Thank you also to my family for supporting this program. Thank you to my friends at Landmark Worldwide, the personal training and development agency responsible for the world-famous Landmark Forum. Thanks to them for their ongoing support and their ongoing listenership of the program. And by the way, one more time I want to say, if you haven't done the Landmark Forum, I hope you make this coming year the year you do it, because I promise you it will make a great impact on the quality of your life and other people you know too. For more details on that, go to www.landmarkworldwide.com. It's www.landmarkworldwide.com. And finally, thank you, our audience. Thank you for making this show a pleasure to do each and every time. Thank you for your listening. It's in your listening we get the opportunity to make a big difference in the quality of your life, and more importantly, and just important, the quality of your television viewing. I hope you've enjoyed this program. We're going to continue to make the best program we can in this year and decade ahead. And with that, for Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening today and all year round. Have a wonderful rest of this year. A great start to your new year. If you're going out on tomorrow night, please party hardy and party smart. We want you back here when we kick off 2020 and a new decade, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Whatever you're up to this coming year, we hope you cause it and a whole lot more. And that's on behalf of all of us at Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and iHeartRadio. And as always, until the next time, next decade and next year, stay well and stay tuned.